We make kids hold each other accountable. I see kids or one of my seniors or one of my captains see somebody in the hallway messing around, and one of my older kids is not saying something to this younger kid, then I'm more probably even more upset with the older guy that didn't take care of his business. So we try not to have just a whole bunch of rules, because the kids know that we try to do everything right.
Hello and welcome to Ahead of the Curve. I am Jonathan Gellner, and thank you so much for being here. This episode is brought to you by Baseball Cloud. Baseball Cloud's revolutionary software platform brings to life the numbers captured by TrackMan and FlightScope. This provides colleges, players, and facility owners around the world a turnkey product, allowing them to analyze their data using key metrics and custom visualizations on one intuitive user interface. Go to baseballcloud.com to find out how you can have your own data analytics department for your program. Data has a story to tell, and Baseball Cloud gives it a voice. In this episode, I welcome Brad Gore, head baseball coach of the Enid Plainsmen. Gore was drafted by the Baltimore Orioles after his high school years at Tologa, but chose to go to Oklahoma State, and then was drafted again by the St. Louis Cardinals after four seasons at OSU. But instead, he chose to get into teaching and coaching after graduating in 1994. Coach Gore has been to the state championship five times in his career, winning it twice. And a few of the topics we get into: how Coach Gore emphasizes the importance of developing competitiveness, the importance of older players leading the younger, and building practice schedules around team energy levels during the demanding travel schedule in the spring. We also discuss the value of connecting with players as people beyond baseball, and that's noted as something that Coach Gore has increasingly appreciated the importance of in the course of his 25-year career. Ladies and gentlemen, here is Brad Gore. Coach Gore, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jonathan.
Definitely, definitely. Well, I've been an admirer of you for a long time. So, long story short, my first year coaching baseball at Duncan High School, and flashback, this is probably 6 years ago, our head coach, Tim Hightower, who did a fantastic job, but he always had high praises of you, and he was like, if you want to become as good of a coach as you could possibly be, you need to watch what Coach Gore does, and you need to pick his brain as much as you can. And I said, okay, yes, sir. So I'm really excited to get you on the mic today. And I know we've had a bunch of conversations over the years, but I'm excited to share with the world how good of a coach you are. But for the guests who may not know you as well as I do, can you talk a little bit about, you know, how you got into the game of baseball and why you decided to get into coaching?
Sure. Again, thanks, Jonathan, for the kind words. I really appreciate that. It's, my coaching career kind of took off. I was raised in a baseball family. My dad was a high school baseball coach. My brother's been a high school baseball coach for 17 or 18 years. You know, I played baseball at Oklahoma State. My brother played baseball at Oklahoma State. He made it to AAA. And so it's just one of those things that's kind of been in our family for a long time. And after my playing days were over, I just didn't want to get away from the game. And so I went into coaching, and I wouldn't change a thing. It's satisfying sometimes and not so satisfying sometimes, with the good way outweighs the bad. And, you know, I just love the game.
Definitely. And you mentioned that your brother played at Oklahoma State, you played at Oklahoma State, and now your son is committed to Oklahoma State. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, he's a 2020 commit, so we feel very blessed that he's getting the opportunity to play for Coach Holliday and their staff. Really exciting time in our household, and you know as well as I do, it takes a lot of hard work and dedication to get to that point. And he hasn't made it there yet. He's still working really, really hard, but it's kind of nice to have the chance for him to kind of carry on our family name and in Oklahoma State baseball. And again, we just feel very fortunate and blessed that he gets that opportunity.
For sure, for sure. Well, if you don't mind, just talk to us about, you know, what you guys are doing this fall. And I know we're getting into winter and really preseason pretty soon, but if we came by and just on a random week at this fall, you know, what would we see and what would a typical week look like for you guys?
Well, you know, we just as you know, we just got turned loose to have kind of full practice December 1. Mm-hmm. But if we were back in the fall, we were limited to 1 hour. We kind of do 3 days of defensive work and 2 days of offensive 1 week. And then the next week we go 3-2 the other way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, on Monday, we may be doing a set of defensive drills, breaking out our outfielders and infielders and catchers and actually even doing some flat ground work with our pitchers, not so much throwing in the fall as we do, you know, at this point right now. But you're going to see a lot of drill work. You're going to see guys doing a lot of different things for, you know, middle infielders working together, corner guys working together, and our outfielders doing drills, just basic drills that we do a lot. We kind of start every practice that anyway, whether it's spring, summer, or whatever. We do the same stuff. So yeah, basically, you're going to see 3 days of defensive and then 2 days of offense, and then mm-hmm. vice versa the next week.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, I want to know, you know, you took over at Enid several years ago. And so you're really starting to put your foot down on what it looks like to be an Enid Plainsman. But what are some things that you guys do? And again, say we showed up to practice one day. If we didn't know what your culture was based upon or what your, I guess you could say, pillars would be, what would you hope that we would see? And what do you guys try and instill into your players?
Well, you want to know, what we always talk about is our practices are like our games, and that, you know, our speed of practice should be no different than the speed of game. So we're always constantly harping on, you know, go faster, do things faster. So when we face the teams that are in the upper echelon of 6A, that we haven't practiced at the level that they're going to be on, and that we hopefully are on, that they have to catch up to us. That's kind of been our big thing, is we kind of hopefully hang our hat on the fact that, you know, when you play us, you're going to have to grind it out. You're going to have to find a way to beat us, because hopefully we're not going to beat ourselves, because we've worked at such a high rate of speed and practice. And we really grind. I mean, I hate to say grind. It's not really a grind if you like it. But we practice extremely fast, and we move around, and there's really not much downtime. And that's kind of one of our things, is that to beat us, you're going to have to outwork us, or you're just going to have to beat us. And that's kind of something that we pride ourselves in. You know, we do a lot of different things for culture building. You know, we're fortunate. You know about our stadium and mm-hmm. how fortunate we are there. And we actually have a room. It's called the Dalma room, that the guy put on the stadium, that has it's just like a kitchen in there. And we do a lot of team dinners after practice. We may run them up there and everybody have a hamburger and a bag of chips and something to drink, just to, you know, let the guys know that we care about them and that, you know, they're important to us. And we host camps and do things that the kids don't get paid for, but they work, and just so that they can kind of give back to our younger Plainsmen that are coming up. So, you know, we got a lot of different things that we do that helps build our culture. But if you ask, hopefully, you know, if you ask our kids what Coach Gore, what he wants done the most, and that is to play hard.
Understand. And I'm sure that you're trying to lead that by example as well.
Yeah, you have to. I try to be the first guy at the yard and one of the last guys to leave. And, you know, it's kind of an old school approach, but I think if you show the kids that, you know, you're willing to be there and put in the time, that they'll follow you. You know, you and I were talking earlier about, you know, kids respecting you and wanting to do things for you as a coach. That kind of goes back to what you want to do for those kids also. And we try to give them everything that we can to show them that we really care about them, not only as a player, but as a person as well.
Definitely. And I think that my career changed whenever I started believing that myself. And, you know, as a young coach, I didn't want them to come off as me being their friend and just being there to, you know, to hang out, I guess. And the older I got, the more I realized that, you know, we may be a family, but they don't necessarily want to be my friend. They're probably too cool for me. And I think that my career really changed whenever I really started to try and get to know them off the field and as a person, and what truly drives them. And And I'm sure that you've seen that exact same thing. And as you mentioned, we were talking about that earlier. And I think that's fantastic. But we do have to have, you know, standards for our programs. And I want to know what are your standards? And, you know, if you guys call them rules or you call them standards, but you're like, hey guys, I love you to death, but these are the things that we look for and these are the things that we don't do. What would you say to those?
Well, first and foremost, we tell our kids that you have to be a student first. You can't even play baseball if you're not passing your classes, you know? So First thing for us is we're big and we hold kids accountable in the classroom, first of all. And we want them to be successful in that way, mostly. We try to do this, and it's worked pretty well, you know. We make kids hold each other accountable. Mm-hmm. I see kids or one of my seniors or one of my captains see somebody in the hallway messing around, and I walk by and one of my older kids is not saying something to this younger kid, then I'm probably even more upset with the older guy that didn't take care of his business. So that's kind of our standard. You know, we try not to have just a whole bunch of rules, because I think the kids know that we try to do everything right. If you do something wrong, you're going to, you know, have to pay the piper every once in a while, and kids are going to mess up. But I really believe that if your older kids set that standard of excellence, and they're the ones that can even have more an effect on our team than I can. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess to answer your question, my policy is that our upperclassmen are going to set the standard, and our younger kids are going to follow. And if they don't, then I'm the kind of the final judge, but our upperclassmen are kind of the jury, and they've done a good job here of kind of setting an example of what we expect in our program.
I love that. You guys got a little kangaroo court going on.
Yeah, it really is. Without payment, but the payoff is that, you know, you don't have Coach Gore harping on you all the time or something. And honestly, man, I've been blessed with some great leaders. This is my 25th year of coaching, and I've been real blessed to have kids that have bought into what I try to do as a person or as a coach. And with no exception this year, I've got a great group of seniors and juniors that are great leaders. And man, we just haven't had discipline actions that you'd look around, you know, and you're wondering what in the world's going on. We just haven't had to take a lot of disciplinary actions since I've been here, and it's been really awesome.
Well, it sounds like you guys are, or at least you in general, are really good about communicating, one, your expectations, but two, just about what's going on in the program, and they're communicating with you vice versa.
Yeah, I think that's a big key is, you know, you've always got a couple guys that you kind of lean on to get the pulse of the team or whatever. But man, we do. We have some really awesome kids. I've been real fortunate to have kids that have always kind of tried to do what I've asked them to do. And honestly, you know, if they're not willing to do that, then they're probably not around. You know, it's one of those type of deals that we really hold our kids accountable for everything that they do, whether it be off the field or on the field. It's all the same to us. And like I said, I've been really fortunate to have some really good kids.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, I think that you leading by example sets the tone for everything else. And I know something else that you are, and that's very competitive, I think. And I think most coaches are, but I know after coaching across from you for several years that you are definitely competitive. And so I want to know, how do you promote that in your program, and how do you kind of build that culture of competition into your practices?
Well, it's funny today, you know, Jonathan, we try to do a competition out of every, when we finish a set of whatever we're doing, we have a competition of some sort almost every time, whether it be we're working on defensive fundamentals or we're hitting in the cage or we're just running a basis, you know, we always try to end whatever session it is we're doing with a competition. As, for example, today we were running, doing our steps to first base, find the ball, the whole thing, you know, and working on our rounding the bags. And that was kind of the end of practice. We're working on a ball behind us, this and that, running the bases. And at the end, we just ran some sprints, you know, who could get to first base the fastest. And, man, the kids love it. You know, I mean, they love to challenge each other. It kind of sets a standard of, I want to be the fastest guy. If we're doing defensive drills and we got three or four fungos going, usually at the end of it, we're doing how many plays can shortstop. We got four shortstops and we got four third basemen and we got four second basemen. We're going to challenge each one to see how many balls they can catch in a row and kind of end it on a competition. And, you know, you get guys hooting and hollering and jumping up and down and whether they win or lose. And I think that just kind of bleeds over into the games that it, you know, it really means something to try to win every pitch.
Sure, sure. I think if you promote that and you guys do it every day, it becomes, you know, second nature.
Yeah, it really does. And our kids, they kind of feed off that. And it also, what it'll do is you'll find out who your most competitive kids are. You may have some really quiet kid that doesn't say much unless he's in competition. And all of a sudden, you know, that creature comes out of there that you've been waiting to see because you put him in competition and he begins to open up and it changes his whole season, you know, just by being out there in competition, you know. And another thing that we do that is kind of different, you know, we don't have great, great numbers, but we do practice a lot of times with our JV and varsity together. Mm-hmm. So for this reason, if I have a really talented varsity second baseman that's extremely competitive, and I've got a little young freshman that just, you know, trying to find his way, we call it peer coaching. And
love it.
A lot of, and man, I totally believe in that. I don't know how many coaches do it, but we do it. I tell our upperclassmen that you're just as big influence on these kids' baseball career as I am. So help them. You know the game. You know what you've done here for 3 or 4 years, whatever it may be. You know what we expect, to help them. And so I think that has made a big impact on our program that, you know, when you put a senior out there, now it takes the right kind of kids. And fortunately, you know, our kids look at it as, hey, I was once a freshman too. I know where I was. I know the feeling. So if I'm a senior, man, I want to get this kid to the level that I'm at. So it has worked really good. And that's back to that competition thing, you know, that those young guys learn that competition factor from those older guys, that it's going hard all the time. And the speed of the game is much faster and the rate of practice goes faster. So they make big, big jumps in the fall and in the winter.
Oh, definitely. It's one of those that you're with the senior, you're leaving the jersey in a better place than you found it, or you're at least trying to, doing everything that you can to do that. You know, I'll tell you from experience, whenever I was a freshman and I had seniors that were telling me probably the same things that my coaches were, I don't mean this in a bad way, but I listened more because I had such admiration for those guys. And you know, head coach and assistant coach are talking all the time, and there's only so much that you can take in. And, you know, just hearing it from a different voice, I think, can make a whole lot of difference, especially to the young guys.
Oh, without a doubt. You know, I just think some of these kids, especially here in Enid, that if they're in the seventh grade and they come and a kid happens to get to play when he's a freshman or sophomore, and they watch that kid play for 2 or 3 years, and then all of a sudden they're in the same uniform that kid's wearing, that it means something when that kid is actually trying to help them and trying to make them a better ball player, because they've been looking up to him for, you know, a couple of years. It's a really big deal to have somebody speak to you that's on your level now and the same playing field that you're on. And it's not a coach. It's one of your peers.
Oh, absolutely. But I want to know, you know, you've mentioned that you have a lot of younger players and that you let them, you for the most part, let the JV practice with the varsity. And I think that's a fantastic idea. But I also want to know, how do you prioritize the individual's development within the team setting? And it's something that I think it's tough, but I mean, I just go back to if each individual player is going to get better, our team's going to get better. And if I can help each of those guys progress to at a level that they're striving for every day, then I want to do that. But it's not easy. And, you know, so what's your advice on that?
Well, my advice on that is it just takes a lot of hours to be a good coach. And if I have a kid that I feel like needs some individual attention, you know, we take that time. We, as a coaching staff, we take that time, and it may be 6:30, 7 o'clock at night that we're in the cage hitting with a guy, or he wants extra fly balls or ground balls, or he wants extra, you know, reps here or there. Then we're going to take that time, whatever it takes, to try to build our team and to build that culture of, hey, you know, this is what we got to do. This is how we do it. It's just one of those things you have to do. And it's, it can take a lot of time, but, you know, I guess that's why they don't put a game clock on baseball, is because it's a different ball game. And you just have to spend the time at it, you know. And I'm fortunate, I got really good assistant coaches to help me that really coach. And so it's just a matter of taking the time for us. I mean, we just make it happen some way.
I understand completely. Well, let's go ahead and skip to, you know, what practices look like in the spring. And, you know, here in Oklahoma, we could be playing almost 6 days a week, and it's practices at a premium. But I want to know, besides the last couple of weeks of practice when everything is kind of ironed out, you know, maybe take us through in the preseason what a typical practice would look like, and, you know, how much time do you spend on what? And to be able to cover everything, it would take 6 hours to be able to do it. But what have you found to be kind of your niche or your recipe for success as far as practice in the spring goes?
So you're talking about during the season?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a great question, because, you know, what I try to do is during games, I'll go to my notebook and write down something that we've, you know, failed at, or that I haven't done a good job of coaching. And so the next day, if we're playing, hopefully if we're at home, we may be on the field just a little bit earlier, working on whatever situation or whatever it is that we're struggling with. And, you know, that's basically what we're looking for, is what's our weaknesses throughout the season, so when we get to the end that we've got all those kinks ironed out. So yeah, it's not so much maybe going, we probably go away from more of the defensive and offensive drills and do more situational stuff mixed in. But I say that, and then, you know, at least one day a week, we're doing something fundamental defensively and offensively. But we do try to go more, lean more towards, you know, what is going on in the games that we need to correct, whether we're not executing rundowns or first and third situations, or maybe we're not communicating on double cuts or whatever it is, and more team oriented stuff in the spring. And it's tough. It's one of those things where, if you know, where we play, it's, you know, 6 o'clock ball game in Tulsa. You know, we're getting in late and we go again. But if we have a couple hours before a game, we're out there working on whatever fundamental it is, or whatever game strategy we're not working on, we're not working, then we're out there getting after it a little bit before the game.
I got you. So the game's going on, and you're just saying, hey, so we didn't do this very well. You jot it down in your notebook, and then that's it, immediately you go over it the next day.
Yes, we try. And you know, I always try to talk about it after the game, that, you know, here was something that and I always try to talk about something real positive we did. Usually there's something, you know, there that you can take both ends and end the thing with something positive. But, yeah, we're going to address it right after the game verbally. And then the next day we're going to try to put that situation together with whatever we have, and make it as real as we can, and try to go through it as many times as we can to kind of get it fixed. So yeah, it's just a, you know, throughout the game, I'm going to write stuff down, or I'm going to say, hey, on one of our charts, hey, write this down. We're not covering the outside part of the play. This guy's blowing us away through two times through our lineup with the same pitch. We got to figure out offensively what we're going to do to create, you know, to correct that. So yeah, it's just the game, man. I mean, I feel like you got to take notes, and you got to work on your weaknesses as quickly as you can, so it doesn't mentally go away in their head.
Let me take a few seconds to tell you guys about On Base U. On Base University is an organization that studies how the human body moves in baseball and softball. They offer certification seminars that teach coaches, trainers, and medical professionals how to assess an athlete's physical ability to perform movement patterns that are specific to hitting and pitching. For example, they just put up a blog post on their website, onbaseu.com, that discussed why hip internal rotation is important in hitting and how they evaluate it with their On-Base U screen. If you want to learn more about On-Base U, I did a podcast with the On-Base U founder, Dr. Greg Rose, episode 78, and he talked about how he modeled the screen after golf assessments that he created for TPI. They are hosting pitching and hitting seminars in Phoenix, Newark, and Houston over the next few months. I will be attending one soon, and I hope to see you there. Yeah, I understand completely. And, you know, something that I love to ask other coaches about, because I think that we could make up a lot of time in it, and that's BP, because there's so many different ways that you can do it. And there's so many successful coaches that do it in so many different ways. But, you know, I just want to know, what's your BP setup look like? And if you don't mind, just take us through it.
Sure. We try to use the two cage approach on the field, where we probably have a guy throwing live BP and then a machine going at the same time. So we're going to have two groups hitting at one time. We'll also have a kind of a base running group where trying to take advantage of a ball in the gap going first to third, or we're looking for a ball on the ground behind us and advancing. And then we'll have our shaggers, obviously. And if everything is right, we'll also have a T station behind our turtle.
Okay.
Going. That's sometimes difficult because coach sometimes wants to talk a little bit too much during BP and slows everybody down. But if we're really snapping through it, it really works good. And, you know, you can get a lot accomplished. Obviously, you got guys taking defensive reps. Also, we always put our outfielders in their outfield positions, and they're breaking on every ball. It's not just run over and toss it in. So we got a lot going on, hopefully a lot of learning even during BP for us.
Okay, so I'm trying to imagine this. So you've got two turtles next to each other. One that's live, and then one that's off a machine?
Yes.
Okay. And then behind it, you've got a tee that is hitting into the back screen net?
Well, we have a little portable net that we put back there, like a stock net.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. So we've got that going on, and then we've got a couple screens we got four screens with a double BP, you know, obviously to protect guys that are throwing and whatever. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, we have a guy at first base running. Maybe we're doing something where we're trying to hit the ball on the ground. But everybody's got a cue off of who they're going off from, what hitter they're going off from. Usually the guy that's on the far left is the cue for the base runners to run off from.
Okay. And are the guys that are all hitting in the same group, or is that three separate groups?
That's three separate groups. So, okay. We'll have 12 guys running around up there at the cage area, with eight up around the cage area and four back behind with the sock net working on their stroke. And then kind of, you know what I'm saying, four guys running bases and about 10, 15 chasing shagging balls. So,
got it. Now, have you used the machine for forever, or is that just kind of a new thing that you guys have started to do?
You know what? Early on in my career, I didn't use the machine very much. Wasn't just a real, real big believer in that. But I do think there's a lot of value in that now, especially with the type of machines that we have that are, you know, you don't have to worry about one banging somebody in the head. They're really accurate. And I think what it does is it gives the kid a chance to see some velo. I think you can't replicate that really any other way, unless you're going live with your own pitchers, you know, in inter squad or scrimmages, which, you know, you really can't do that every day. So to get that, you know, that little extra hump on there, we use the machine quite a bit.
Got it. And we use it, I think, almost every single day besides last Friday. We actually, you talked about competition. So we use the machine every day. And to be honest, the kids absolutely hate it because it just wears them out most of the time. And, you know, it's just one of those things. It's like, guys, if you hit 800 in practice, then we're not doing our job to prepare you for the game. You talk about speed of the game and speed of the player earlier. But last Friday, we've got a couple former pitchers on our coaching staff. And I was like, all right, well, let's just do a little dirty for 30. So we set set up the L screen at 30 feet away and just, I don't think they scored a run off of us because we were just mixing BP and we'd give them three outs and it'd be four pitches and they'd be done. And so that's another way that we've tried to figure out how to simulate BP, you know, and just to make it more game like. And I think that the more that I'm into it, the more that I don't want them to take reps without having to make a decision. And that's one of those things that if you're mixing BP or you're hitting off of a machine, it's not going to be perfect every time, but you have to make a decision just like in a game, whether or not to swing or not. And if it's just laid in there at 40 miles an hour, right down the middle with perfect BP every time, you don't have to, you're just kind of mindlessly swinging. But that was a lot of fun. So we do use machines every single day or most days. And then also we do a little dirty 30 as well. And that's been a lot of fun, but you've got to get in there and you've got to do that sometimes. I'm sure you do, but you're,
oh yeah,
give them a little Oklahoma State special right there.
Yeah. I still get up there and throw even as old and fat as I am now out of shape, but it's still a lot of fun. You know, we also use, we don't do this as often as maybe we should, but we do use cones in the outfield and try to make guys go gap to gap more than, you know, down the lines. And, that is something that I should do more that I don't is, you know, use cones and make guys hit in the gaps. And I think that's really, really, really valuable. I think guys get, you know, even if machine or whatever live BP, they sometimes just get pull happy and you got to rein them back in a little bit. And that those cones in the gaps sure seem to, if you get a couple swings and you get pull happy, you got to get out, it can change things a little bit.
Sure. And, you know, I love that. And I love being able to put a competition aspect on it of, hey, who is the group that can have the most in the cones? I mean, that's just a good constraint to have. And we talk about, you know, making competitions and practices. I think, and you mentioned this earlier, we can make anything a competition, but it's going to heighten their awareness on what's going on because they're like, oh, instead of just being left field to right field, there's cones out there now. And now I've got to hit them. And now we've got pushups. If we lose, oh, I'm in. So
yeah,
I really like that a lot. And, you know, another thing that's really tough whenever you play, you could be playing 5 days a week is trying to figure out a time and a lift schedule in season. So is there any tips that you could offer us for that? And, you know, when do you guys find time to do that? If you do find time to do that and yeah, what would you offer for us?
That's a good question. We kind of in the spring, once we start playing, we'll go from we lift either 3 or 4 days a week up until the season starts.
Okay.
And once it starts, we just go 2 just to maintain. And so we don't go backwards. We're just in maintain mode throughout the season because, like I said, we're on the bus. We're in kind of a different spot in Oklahoma. So every time we get on the bus, we're looking at 2 hours wherever we go. So it's really hard to that's one of our tougher things is, you know, like I said, we play a 7 o'clock game in Bixby and we don't get home till 1 in the morning. And then, you know, get the kids up at 6 o'clock in the morning for weights is probably not very smart.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of mix that up, you know, we go off the feeling of what our team needs and we kind of look at our schedule for the week and we determine, hey, you know, Wednesday looks like a day where, you know, we can have a light practice and then we can get our weight training in. And then we play in a tournament at 1 o'clock on Friday. And when we come back, we can jump in the weight room when we get back. So to answer your question, I guess it just varies from time to time that we're going to play at home on a couple of days. Then we may have a 6:30 in the morning workout to get one of our days in. And it just varies with us on we're going off the feeling of our players and how tired we are. And I, you know, we got to get it in, but we just go with what we feel is best for our team on times.
Yeah. And that's the toughest thing. And especially with the drive that you guys had. And I know that a couple of years ago, this is for the listeners who don't know, this is my second stint at Union and our strength coach would always recommend Monday mornings and Thursday mornings. And we haven't lifted in the mornings a ton this fall just because we want them to get an adequate amount of sleep when we can. But he always said Monday mornings because you never play on Sundays. and Thursday mornings because you never play on Wednesdays. And so that I always really like that. And that's, you know, that's something that if you really can't find time after practice, it's, you know, not speaking to you, Coach Gore, or maybe I am, but definitely for the listeners who are like, man, I can't find time. We've got to. And you mentioned that you guys lift 3 or 4 days a week and you take 3 or 4 weeks off and they've lost a lot of that.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know what, Jonathan, I've never really thought about the Monday, Thursday thing like that. But that is an awesome idea. And you may have just gave me a new way of doing that. But if you're not doing it, you're behind. I can tell you that. Mm-hmm. If you're not putting in that time in the weight room and maintaining at least, you know, it kind of hurts me just doing 2 days a week because I know we've worked really hard to get to where we are. And then it kind of feels like we're letting off the pedal a little bit. But, you know, the research kind of shows that, especially as young as our kids are, I mean, you say, well, they're high school kids, but they're still young kids. They got a lot of body development and growth. And you mentioned sleep, how important that is, and our diet. Our kids, we've tried to really incorporate. We've had a lot of people come and talk to them about what they should eat. And, you know, we tell them that it's probably more important what you put in your body. You can put junk in your body and lift as many weights as you want. You're not going to get any dividends, but if you put the right stuff in there and do the right amount of lifting, it's really going to pay off. So it's one of those things where we know we have to do it. So we're going to find a way to get it done.
Definitely. And like you mentioned, if it's important to you, you've just got to find the time to do it. But you said earlier that you've been a coach for 25 years. And I love this question because it allows for a little bit of self-reflection, but also, you know, it's one of those things that if I could go back, I would do this or I would do that. But what do you wish you had known before you became a head coach? And, you know, what would you tell your first year self?
Well, we've kind of hit on this a little bit, but, and you even said it earlier, I think, that when you were younger, you would have took more time to maybe build relationships. That's probably my, you know, if I could go back and I was younger, when I was younger, it was just about baseball, you know, I want to get better. I want to practice. I want to play games. You know, I was so young that I didn't take time to enjoy the small things, which were, as I get a little older, you know, I start to look and think, man, I really enjoyed just having a few minutes sit down with this kid and get to know him. And I think that would be my number one thing is going back. I loved my players. I mean, there's not one group or one team that I'd say, you know, man, I didn't enjoy that. But I don't think I took the time as a younger coach to maybe have a more personal relationship with a kid and find out what's going on at home and what makes him tick a little bit more. And you know, if I'm a young coach, that would be one thing that I would sure stress to them is to, you know, take time, enjoy it. It's there's a lot to be had from the kids. They can teach you a lot as well. And, you know, not everything might seem rosy on the outside for them, but on the inside, it might not be. And there's a lot of things that you can help them with personally that, you know, you just forget how much you really mean to that kid. I don't think coaches a lot of times understand the influence their words have on these kids if they really, really respect you. And a lot of times I didn't take the time to think that, man, this is important to this kid. It was just more about building the team instead of building personal relationships.
Yep. Guilty as charged. Another thing that I don't want to say that I wonder about a lot, but I'm really bad about trying to plan the future in the now. And obviously I would love to be a head coach someday. And I'm really, I don't want to, I just want to enjoy every minute that I have right now. But, you know, something that I think that some of the coaches that I'm around right now and you do yourself is good head coaches help prepare their assistants to be good head coaches someday. And so I want to know, you know, as a head coach, how do you prepare your assistants to be for the ones who want to be head coaches someday? How do you help prepare them for that?
Well, you know what? My number one thing is that I try to tell my coaches is I want you to coach. I want you to feel comfortable. I'm not looking over your shoulder. If there's something that maybe I don't like, we'll discuss it, but I don't look at it as I'm their boss as much as I am, you know, I'm their buddy in coaching and I learn from them just as much as they do from me. but I try to let my coaches coach. I mean, let them do their thing, have their say, try it their way, you know. And I've been awful fortunate to have guys that are really loyal to me and do whatever I ask. So I've been real fortunate on that end, man, that, you know, I just try to let my coaches coach, I guess would be the answer, is I let them try to be involved in as much as they can to see all aspects. You know, if we have a problem, I want them to be involved in it. Not that they're taking any of the heat or whatever it may be. I don't even consider it heat, but if we have a dilemma that needs to be solved, they're in on every part of it so that they understand, you know, that it's not always just about X's and O's and making pitches or hitting home runs. There's outside stuff that, you know, you have to deal with as a head coach that you might not have to as an assistant. So mm-hmm. I try to let them see all that stuff that I can. Even the financial part of running a program is not easy. You know, having enough money to do this, or, you know, having your Booster Club help you do that, or going to the school and asking them, you know, we need this or that. It's a pretty big undertaking just to run a program. So financially, you know, I let them get in on that a little bit and let them see all the parts of it that are maybe not even non-baseball related.
No, that's really good. And you can definitely tell by just our conversation today that you're very passionate about that. And you're also very passionate about learning. I mean, we talked about the Monday, Thursday thing, and you're like, hey, that's a great, you know, and so it sounds like you're constantly trying to better yourself, better your program, and better your players. But I want to know, what's something that you've learned lately that's gotten you really excited?
Well, you know what? There are a lot of things that I learned. I'm kind of one of these guys. I like to look at the Twitter and look at all the stuff, but I got to know a little bit at last year's Oklahoma Baseball Coach Association clinic was Kai Correa. Mm-hmm. And I got to sit down and pick his brain a little bit. And then of course I watch all of his videos and his training stuff. And man, we've really put a lot of his stuff into our practices. I love it. I mean, I'm giving Kai a plug here, but that stuff that he brings to the table defensively. Now, there's other guys that we follow too and do stuff that they do. But I've done a lot of Kai's stuff here recently that has really helped our defensive program. I really believe that.
And I'm a huge fan of Kai and obviously former podcast guest, and I just, again, he's a stud, but I also love how gifted of a communicator he is. And if you guys are listening and don't know, you know, hashtag Friday Fielders or Kai Correa, make sure you guys go check that out, because he and the Friday Fielders crew do an absolutely fantastic job. But my last question that I always love to end with, and it all boils down to the players. And so if our listeners are listening to this and they want to take something away that has to do with our players, I want to know, if I came to your practice tomorrow and I said, hey, you know, starting shortstop for Enid, what is your favorite thing that you do in practice that Coach Gore has for you guys? Or if you show up one day and you're saying, hey, we're doing this today, and they just go ecstatic and they're getting really excited, what would a couple of those things be?
Well, you wouldn't believe this, but I swear to you, the group that I have this year, no doubt about it, they love to do what we call 21 outs, which is, I'm sure coaches do it probably all over the place, where you send your guys out, you got a guy with a fungo, and you try to get 21 outs before you make an error. And again, it is super competitive. You know, we make it as tough as we can, and we make guys sprint off and on the field for conditioning and you know, guys hold each other accountable. Again, there's that word. Our players hold each other accountable, and it kills somebody if they bobble a ball or they throw a ball away, and we put time on it and this and that, but they absolutely love the competition part of getting 21 outs.
And so say we have a couple of listeners who are like, Coach, what in the world is that? Can you mind explaining that?
Well, what we do is for us, we have three different defensive teams. So we have one defensive team on the field, and if they can get 21 outs before making an error, then they win. If they make an error, another team gets to run on the field and try to get 21 outs before they make an error. And it's just kind of a game. It's competition between three different teams. So it could be over on the first group and guys on the side, you know, are over there trying to distract and do all this stuff. And it's really, really, it is kind of fun. It's fun to watch. You get to see kids, you know, compete and also yell for each other and a lot of pats on the backs, and it gets super competitive. But once, if that team makes an error, they have to sprint off the field. The other team sprints on and it starts over again. So, it's nice to watch guys, you know, root for each other and pat each other on the back. And it's real. I don't know why, but it really gets our guys excited.
That's awesome. Well, Coach Gore, we do appreciate your time and thank you so much for being with us today. And if any of our guests have any questions about anything that you covered today, where would you send them to get in touch with you?
Well, my email would be bdkcc18@gmail.com.
Cool. Well, I'm just going to open it up for you and just, you know, anything else that you'd like to tell our listeners before you go?
You know what? I don't really, Jonathan, but I sure appreciate you having me on, and I appreciate what you're doing for baseball and in Oklahoma and everywhere else is my understanding. And, you know, I just hope you continue to do good, and I really appreciate you having me on.
Thank you for listening to Ahead of the Curve. Before you go, I'd love to be able to get in touch with you, and we have several different ways of doing so. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at AOTC_podcast. You can join the AOTC Coaches Facebook group. And if you want to be a part of the mini clinic emails, both of those links are listed below. If you enjoyed the show, please consider leaving us a rating or review to help others find and stay ahead of the curve.